This is Halftime with the Playmakers, your midweek partner with the live show, The Playmakers, aired on WNM 90.5 on Saturdays from 12:30 to 2 p.m. I'm your host, Michael Trim Jr., and in today's show, we have some great topics. We'll be discussing FAMU men's basketball, the NFL playoffs, which team needs to make a move at the NBA deadline the most, and why. But to help me with these topics, I have some great guys in the studio.
Yo, it's your boy UJ Robinson, aka UJR3. Every junior remember, let's make some more.
What's going on, everybody? It's Jay Lloyd. You already know what the deal is. Back with the Playmakers, bringing that sauce all the way from Stone Mountain, Georgia, man. Let's get it.
What's going on, New York? It's your boy Jay Scott.
What the hell you just said? Is that Patois?
Yeah, a little bit. It's your boy Jay Scott. Telling you what's hot, what's not on 90.5 The Flavor Station, repping the 813 Tampa, Florida.
All right, fellas, how we feeling today?
Pretty good, man. Well rested after that whole blizzard we had.
Y'all celebrated Victory Monday. I know I did.
Who won for you?
I'll get into that later.
Let's
hop into some FAMU basketball. Let's start with the men's basketball team. They're currently on a 4-game win streak following a win last night against Jackson State. So my question to you all is, how confident are you guys in the men's basketball team and not only getting to the SWAC tournament, but actually competing in?
More than I've ever been in my 4 years here. And that's just genuinely speaking.
But I mean, it's easy to say that when typically the ceiling for us has been, missed it by that much.
It's very easy to say.
No, this year, I think for the men's side especially, that they can be competitive in the SWAC. Obviously, you've seen some great performances from Milton Matthews and Sterling Young. They're kind of finding their identity. Coach had talked earlier in the season about, you know, making sure that they wanted a high-intensity offense and putting up a lot of shots, especially from the three-point line. They kind of found their stroke, and it's been working for them because not only have they been outscoring their opponent, especially in the second half, but on defense they've been able to create turnovers, which in turn creates more offensive opportunities.
Yeah, it's definitely encouraging because I feel like in the last episode we kind of talked about them needing a more balanced offensive attack, and they've been getting it. Sterling Young obviously had a big game against Pine Bluff, but in the last few games, especially in the Jackson State game where he didn't play, they were able to get strong production from other guys on the team as well.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging. You have a group of guys who are playing together and are able to operate without their star, and it's also helpful to have a star like Sterling Young, who, you know, has been shooting the lights out so far this season. We talked about him kind of finding his groove at the beginning of the year, but now it seems like they've kind of turned him as the true number one option on the team. So it's good to see that they found out at this point in the season.
And by sitting through some of the press conferences, Coach had mentioned that, like, Sterling Young wasn't originally part of the starting five. You know, he found his spot off the bench.
Which is crazy.
But I mean, it
makes sense, but it's just crazy to see that man hooping like that. And it's like, dang.
But even then, the resiliency of this team is that, okay, I'm doing what's best for the team. And now that he's, you know, he's sat and he's had his time, it's his time to make production and plays, and he hasn't missed.
Yeah. And 2 weeks ago, I mean, we got blown out by Southern and had a tough loss to Grambling. But we really turned it around. And I just feel like these couple of games, especially beating Jackson State, who was above us in the conference, it's made me a lot more confident in this team going forward in the SWAC. I'm looking forward to games against like Alabama State and Alabama A&M coming up. I think those are going to be real prove-it games for me. But I'm much more confident in this team, especially with the offensive attack.
I will say second half adjustments are going to be key, especially when you start getting to the more competitive teams. It's one thing I've noticed about games in the past is that they can get off to a hot start, but especially the Arkansas Pine Bluff game, they got off to an extremely hot start. But slowly and slowly, once Pine Bluff started to adjust their defense to what the offense was doing, they kind of start to inch back in the game. They still ended up winning that game by double digits. But I mean, if you saw what the score was looking
it was
in the
coming
first
back
half,
in the second
it
half
been a little
lot.
Bit.
It should have been a lot more. Press it was only a 10-point win. It easily could have been a 20-something point win.
Even more over than just the men's, the women's team is over here dominating as well.
Yes.
I had a chance to talk to Coach Gordon after the Pine Bluff game, and she was telling me about how, you know, just making sure that they had the right personnel out there, getting Sabu back, especially helped on the defensive side of the ball. She had, I think it was close to like 8 steals against Pine Bluff.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Obviously, it's translating because defense leads to offense, and, you know, they had a big game most recently against Jackson, and I'm looking forward to see what they do as well. I think they're both ranked 6 now in this way.
The men are ranked 5th and the women are ranked 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
But speaking on the men's team, because I'm actually like very intrigued because I'm used to seeing terrible, unenergetic, you know, men's basketball teams.
It's gonna get you, Trim.
Nah, but the transfers that Coach Query has brought in, they're all, you know, making an impact. Sterling Young, Milton Matthews, Chapman wasn't a transfer with Query when he came in, but still making an impact. impact. And these guys that are coming in, they're making an impact. And I think, like Justin said, I believe, you know, once you get into stiffer competition, you know, Prairie View is a good team. You're going to see Jackson again. You got to see Southern again. I want to see the adjustments that coach makes to see like how good of a coach he is. Because I think right now we've seen that, okay, clearly he's a better coach than we had last year. Can't even remember his name. That's how bad he was. But I want to see like, well. I want to see the adjustments that he makes to see how good of a team that we can be and how far we can go. Like, you know, I'm a very optimistic person. You know, if we see those adjustments, we hypothetically win the SWAC, hypothetically get a first four game in the NCAA tournament. You know, I'm just saying stuff right now. But
one thing I love possible. About Coach Curry from just what I've seen so far is he really trusts his guys. Yeah. You can tell that just by how many times he's changed the starting lineup. No, he feels like he has a good group of or a good core of players to rotate in and out of the lineup when necessary. So like I said, when you're missing a guy like Sterling Young, who's electric on offense, really gets things going for y'all, he still coaches with that same confidence. They still play with that same confidence. The energy and the culture is really starting to build right now. So
I'm glad they're hitting it at the right time too, because when you look at the roster, I'm thinking that this is like a really win now type of team. I mean, we've been neglecting acknowledging it, but Coach Curry's on a 1-year deal, and a lot of these players are either fourth years or grad transfers. So this is a very win now team, and they're hungry. They're getting after it. So I'm excited to see what they do. You know, coming back home now and then going further in the season.
All right, my final question on the FAMU topic: what's the ceiling for these two teams?
Oh, I mean, I think that later rounds in the SWAC tournament is more than the ceiling. It's the expectation.
I would say I can echo that. Later rounds in the SWAC tournament for the women's team, I'm just a little skeptical of them offensively. Defensively, I think that's their strong suit right now. But for the men's team, I really could see them making a tough push into the tournament.
I'm going to give the women's ceiling around, I'm going to say 2-3 seed right now. I'll actually give them 4 seed in the SWAC. But men, I actually think their ceiling can be the 2 seed if they turn around. Mm. Or they continue playing like that. I think
they got to continue playing.
Well, yeah, it's just
they got to see Jackson again. They got to see Southern. And Southern is always going to be Bethune as well. Bethune,
yeah,
Southern,
those are gonna
and
be
Jackson.
Games, but I think the Bethune game is going to be a revenge game for them. And I actually have them winning it. So.
Okay, one last thing. The top 8 teams make the SWAC tournament. I didn't know that, but I'm going to defer to y'all. In the first round games, is it a home court game or is it a neutral court?
It's home court.
It's home court?
Yeah.
Okay. But on to the next topic, college basketball. If the season were to end today, who would be our National Player of the Year? Start with EJ.
Excuse me.
I can go first.
All right, go ahead, Justin.
I actually have to hear these things.
Shout out to Jeffrey Hood Jr., but I have to give love to Cooper Flagg. I've been so impressed with this young man because, I mean, for him right now, he seems to be the main initiator on Duke. He's a great playmaker. Defensively, we can't deny he's one of the better defensive prospects in this draft as well. I know that Auburn, and they have the best record. They're the number one team in the NCAA right now. I expect that to change because Auburn has a pretty tough stretch of games going, and I think Broome is a great player. I'm really interested in seeing how he gets through this next stretch of games, though, and how he performs.
He got hurt.
Oh, he's hurt now?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he got hurt.
So he's out for the season?
Not necessarily.
I think it was indefinitely. Is this someone with his ankle, right?
Yeah, it was indefinitely. I don't know if it was his ankle, but I know it was indefinitely. Well, that's the last thing I saw.
Oh, wow. Well,
but to your point, though, the reason why I wanted to just hear what you were going to say first, because I was going to say Cooper Flagg as well, but I don't know. I'm leaning towards Eric Dixon personally.
Mike, who are you thinking?
I would go with Cooper Flagg. I think he's been the best player in college basketball. I believe he leads Duke in all 5 major statistical categories. 42 points in a game. I think that's an ACC freshman record, I believe. I can't say too much because, you know, Jeff, you know how he gets.
Oh yeah, he's gonna start tweaking up.
But also I gotta show love to my Florida guy, Walter Clayton.
Walter Clayton.
He's a hooper. He's a hooper. But gotta show love to him. But it's a lot of guys in contention. Cam Jones. I know Jalen brought him up.
Okay. That was the guy I was going to bring up. I was like, we're not talking about Marquette at all?
Yeah,
Cam Jones is having a beast of a season. And his playmaking from last year to this year has improved. I think he might be up like at least 3 assists from what he was last year.
He is, averaging 2.4 a game.
And then one more name I want to throw in there, Chaz Lanier from Tennessee. A lot of SEC guys could get it on those top tier teams. I know Mark Shears, he's not really in the conversation, but still one of the best guards in college basketball.
But yeah, Cam Jones is my pick. I mean, almost 20 points per game, almost 3 assists a game. He's consistently putting Marquette in situations to win. Now it's up to adjustments made by the coach and the rest of the the team to kind of close out games, which they've struggled with. He struggled from the three-point line as well, but I've been really impressed with his game.
I can't find nothing on this injury.
He struggled, but
Johnny Broome?
No,
I don't know what it is about Cam Jones, just the way he plays, his command on the court. Every time he takes a three, I feel like it's going in. every time he takes a three, I feel like
why
he,
not let it fly?
And him, like, his ability to drive and get to the rim and get to the spots at the bucket, it's also impressive too. So not only do I think he should be in conversations for National Player of the Year, but I think he's somebody who could definitely rise as we start to talk more about the 2025 NBA draft.
And then last point, let's just go round table. If the season were to end today, who would y'all pick as the national champion?
Here, you gonna love mine.
I'm curious. Like, go ahead. Because I'm curious here.
I
gonna say Florida?
Yeah, it was.
Florida got some hoops.
Florida been hooping, bro. I know that's crazy. I know it's crazy.
The SEC's just so competitive.
I know. I know it's crazy, but Florida been hooping.
I think
dog.
The SEC's so competitive that there won't be the national championship won't be from the SEC.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I can definitely see them just kind of beating up.
Knocking themselves out.
Yeah.
Like, I know how, we talk about Jeff, but Duke might go all the way just because the ACC is not as strong as it used to be.
In terms of seeding and everything, it makes the most sense.
Like, I don't see Duke losing another game.
Yeah.
Especially in conference. Like, I think they're going to win the ACC championship. I think they're going to be a first seed. What's their rank? They're ranked like, I don't even know the rank.
They're two.
Yeah, they're two after Auburn.
Yeah. They're going to be.
Iowa State three,
seed.
Though.
I haven't watched much of Iowa State's game, but I would say the way too early pick.
I just watched Iowa State this weekend. They play Arizona State. It was a close game till like the 5 minute mark in Iowa State.
Now I will say this: I still believe that Alabama is a top contender to win the championship this year. I'm looking at them in that Auburn game. I think that game is this weekend, along with the Duke and UNC game too. That is an intriguing matchup for me. I think Alabama is extremely deep. They have good guard play. They're tall. They could give anybody a run for their money too. And I can say this about Duke: what scares me about Duke is defensively, they are actually insane. They're probably one of the better college defensive teams I've seen in a long time. So it's tough because I still believe in Alabama. Y'all know I'm an Alabama football fan. I'm not too much of an Alabama basketball fan, but from what I've seen from their team so far, that's a deep squad. And usually teams like that who have veteran leadership and depth, they end up going very far in the tournament.
You brought up a good point, the guard play with Alabama. Not only do they have Marcus Spears, but Aiden Holloway is like, I think he's probably going to win SEC Sixth Man of the Year. They have a Sixth Man of the Year, right?
Or I think so, SEC Sixth Man of the Year, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to win that award. Like, he's one of the most efficient guards in the country. Granted, in, you know, not in limited time, but he's putting up 12 points a game on 47% shooting from the field and 41% from three on 5 attempts a game. So it's like, if there were an SEC team to win it, it would probably be Bama. I'd say Bama or Florida, a little bit biased, but those are the only two teams I could see. Not the only two, but if I was putting some money on it, I'd say Alabama or Florida.
This is going to be a great weekend of college hoops, though. I can tell you that, though. And I know that Duke and UNC is usually the rivalry that catches everybody's eyes, but the Iron Bowl basketball edition, I'm locked in.
What are the other matchups besides the Iron Bowl?
The Alabama-Auburn Iron Bowl game for February 15th. I mean, that's going to be looking forward to that. We got some good rivalries this year.
All right.
I think it's solid.
All right, fellas. Now on to some NFL. It was a championship weekend in the NFL. So what were your biggest takeaways before we get into our Super Bowl picks? What were the biggest takeaways from championship weekend?
Saquon Barkley is a generational running back.
Generational.
Is a Thank generational running back. And the organization of the New York Giants deserves to be banned from the league for malpractice for allowing that trade to happen.
Yeah, it wasn't a trade. He just signed it.
He
just signed the 3-year deal.
But they let him go is the issue.
They had the opportunity to pay him.
They did. Yes. They chose Daniel Jones, who was no longer on their team.
My big takeaway is I'm not sure how much more Josh Allen has to do. I mean, we talk about the series, not even just the amount of times he's lost to Mahomes and Claus, but just the way that he's lost those games, how much he's had to do to even get them in position to win those games. And then we're talking drop passes, missed field goals. Yeah, the other guy on the other side of the field goes down the field in 13 seconds in one of the games. Like, it's just a series of unfortunate events for him. I feel horrible for him. The shot of Josh Allen after Patrick Mahomes completes that pass on fourth down to get the first down. The shot of Josh Allen on the bench, he looks so deflated. It's heartbreaking to see. It truly is. And I don't know how much more the Bills have to do. I don't know. Like, I seriously do not know what else they can do to get over the hump.
Honestly, there's nothing he can do.
Okay, we're gonna disregard what you're saying right now because I feel like this is an extreme bit of bias. But can we talk about the third down call?
Yeah.
Because I feel like we kind of disagreed on that. I'm not mad at the call.
Just the screenplay to the side?
The screenplay off Mark of Cooper? An all-out blitz.
So Mark Cooper.
I think that's the problem. The
corner blitz?
Yes. I think but before the corner blitz. Because the corner blitz was on fourth down.
Right.
But I think that's the main problem to Amari. You're talking about to Amari Cooper, right? On the third?
It was a quick wide receiver screen because they dialed up a blitz on third and fourth down.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about Amari Cooper, though. Mm. I think I would have liked them to go to Keon Coleman a lot more that game. I feel like they should have gone to Keon Coleman in the game.
But that third down play, people are blaming the coordinator, but I'm like, listen, you have two options when they're running a all-out blitz. You have a combo blitz from your tackles, and you're sending a linebacker and a safety to come and fill. Mm-hmm. You either throw into the blitz or you throw a screen. They opted for a screen because Josh Allen had time to look up one time before he had pressure in his face. That's not a bad call. What's crazy is the call they had on fourth down, because if you know that they're running the similar pressure, they've been trying to get Josh Allen out of the pocket all game. They've not been allowing him to kill him on his feet. They want to get the ball out of his hands really quickly. You send him back to on a four-step drop?
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm listening to Romo on the broadcast, and he's breaking down the fourth down play. He's like, hey, I don't know if they were, if anybody expected them to blitz. And I'm like, I am on my couch, and I definitely was expecting a blitz to come. Like,
I didn't think they would blitz from the corner, though. That was a bold call.
That was a great play call by Spags.
Any other route besides the one that he ran out of a corner blitz?
Yeah.
Because they wanted a deeper mesh route.
And then you blitz with McDuffie.
Yeah.
That
wasn't expected. Right.
That's what I'm saying.
You think he's definitely going back into coverage, and then he comes at the quarterback. I think it was a good play call. I'm not mad at the play call on third. I think it was a good play call. I just don't know if the personnel was the right choice. That's all I'm saying. I don't know if Amari Cooper going to him in that big of a spot was the trend. And it's just no change to Amari Cooper, but we know who he is. We know he's getting a little older. We know he's not the same guy. It's just simple as that.
Overall, though, I will say the message of the playoffs, which has been the message for FAMU football this year, ball security is job security. Fumbles have been so costly to every single team.
There was, I believe, it was five total fumbles in that game.
Yeah.
And the Bills got all of them.
Well, not even just the, I'm not even talking about just that game. I'm talking about
the Ravens, the Bucks.
Like, if you fumble the ball and you're giving these elite quarterbacks a chance to win.
Because this is, well, I'm going to let you finish first, but this goes into my takeaway. My takeaway is I feel like the Commanders are a couple pieces away from being a legitimate Super Bowl contending team. And they're still a Super Bowl contending team, but I feel like they get a couple pieces on defense.
Yeah.
And they play more disciplined football. And I was talking about with the disciplined football, they did beat the Lions in a shootout, yes, but that was the Lions' fault of their own.
Oh, yeah, no, I feel Lions beat themselves.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like they get a couple defensive pieces to where they're no longer in shootouts with these high teams like the Eagles and the Lions. I think they generally turn their team around and become a Super Bowl contending team. That's my big takeaway from seeing them as an Eagles fan, too.
All right. My biggest takeaway? Bro, what is so funny?
No. All right, go ahead.
My biggest takeaway from championship weekend is that Jalen Hurts is a top five quarterback in the NFL. We have the Mahomes, the Lamar Jacksons, the Josh Allens, the Joe Burrows, you know, if you want to throw him
in there.
He wasn't
even a top five quarterback in the playoffs.
Joe Burrow?
No.
Oh, Jalen Hurts?
Yes.
Name five?
We did talk about this. Yeah, for sure. All right, Mahomes, Jackson,
okay,
Allen,
okay,
I'm gonna go Stafford,
okay,
and I'm gonna go Daniels.
I'll give you Daniels, but Stafford is debatable.
Why?
I'm not even gonna give you JD.
What?
It's like JD was good. JD was great throughout the regular season. He was great in the playoffs. But when it mattered the most, the better quarterback won. And I know we can talk about his support.
The better team won.
Yeah.
No. The better quarterback won.
No. The better team.
So you
won.
Think if Kenny Pickett started that game the whole time, you think that the Eagles would have still won?
I mean,
actually, that did happen, and they did win.
Exactly. And they played in the regular season, and Kenny Pickett started. Well, he didn't start.
To his point, that Kenny Pickett did play, and we did lose.
Right.
Okay.
In a regular season game.
Okay, fair. Jaden Daniels didn't come to the ball.
Logic doesn't work for me.
You said what?
Jaden Daniels didn't come to the ball.
Correct. I'm not saying.
We're talking specifically
QB
play. Quarterback play specifically.
Right.
If you look at the stats across the board, Jaden Daniels has had one of the best rookie performances out of the playoffs of any rookie in NFL history.
Yeah, but that's what he
so
had
why
to
is that
do.
Debate of all the five quarterbacks I named, that's the one you're debating right now?
JD?
Yeah.
You're talking about in the playoffs?
Yes.
No, I'm debating all of them except Mahomes.
All of them except Mahomes.
Jalen Hurts Lawrence was better than Lamar Jackson
in the playoffs.
I know. Just, in the playoffs.
Like, actually, yes. I want to hear this. I want to hear this.
He was better than Lamar Jackson in the playoffs.
This playoffs, he played in 3 rounds.
As did every other quarterback. Go ahead. Continue.
131 yards, 62% completion percentage, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. 128 yards, 75% completion percentage. I believe he had a rushing touchdown in that Rams game.
Yeah.
Right.
40-yard run.
When he was asked to be a pocket passer, because y'all said he couldn't pass, or he wasn't an elite passer.
Okay, yeah.
He delivered 246 passing yards, 71% completion percentage, 8 yards per pass, 1 touchdown, and I think he had 2 rushing touchdowns, but 110 quarterback rating. He hasn't turned the ball over in 3 years in the playoffs.
Which is something Lamar Jackson did do against Buffalo.
And I'm probably outside of Mahomes, Lamar is my second favorite quarterback. But Lamar turns the ball over. He doesn't.
So you're basing this off of the ability to turn over the ball.
And performance.
Okay. I disagree, but I can understand that take.
I think my only one would be Stafford. I think overall QB. Like, I see what you're coming from. QB play just in terms of like the impact of a quarterback to their team.
Exactly.
I will give you those 4 before Jalen Hurts. I will do that. I think Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, and Daniels are better quarterbacks than Hurts.
I mean, what's the job of a quarterback?
Lead his team.
I think Jalen Hurts does, and he leads his team, but I think he does that better than everybody but Mahomes.
I think.
But when you include talent and stuff like that.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that. I think he's a better leader than all of them, but lead in terms of not just leadership mentality-wise, but also how you perform in the field. Saquon Barkley takes a lot off his plate.
Thank you. Because if we looked at how Jalen Hurts performed last playoffs, we had that exact same issue. They had no identity in the run game whatsoever. They lost to the Bucs in the first round. There was an issue during the regular season as well. You add Saquon Barkley. Saquon Barkley is now not only a player putting up production numbers on offense, but it takes the load off of what you expect Jalen Hurts to do as a quarterback.
Right, but I think that, first of all, last year was an anomaly because we seen the year before they get to the Super Bowl, won 13 games, got to the Super Bowl. Last year,
I could have told you the Bucs were going to beat the Philadelphia Eagles. That's a bad matchup.
Right, because they started, when they started 10-2, and then they tanked the last, 5 games?
Yeah, we started losing a lot.
So it's like.
Ended up losing the division, too.
Yeah, they didn't win the division last year, right?
The Eagles, nope. They lost
the Cowboys lost to the Packers, so look at that.
And then let me throw this out there, too. Super Bowl, 57, 58? Doesn't matter. When they played the Chiefs in 2023, 27 for 38, 304 yards, 1 touchdown through the air, 71% completion percentage. When I throw that out there. So he showed up in the big game. Then also, the last 7 years, Jalen Hurts was a starter. I seen this on Twitter, and I seen a graphic on somebody posted it, one of the mainstream platforms. National championship, college football playoffs, NFL playoffs, Super Bowl appearance, playoff appearance, another Super Bowl appearance.
What does that have to do with this playoffs? The last 2-3 weeks of NFL football. We are not talking about his time in Alabama.
In this playoff appearance, he hasn't turned the ball over and he's performing.
So
he's doing
that goes back
he's
to my
doing
question.
What he's asked as a quarterback.
But this goes back to my this goes back to my question. Are we basing quarterback performance simply off the fact that he does not turn over the ball? Why? Because, well, for one, he doesn't have to. He has Saquon Barkley to run the ball for him. That's not
Daniel Jones has Saquon Barkley, and what did that get him?
Okay, I mean, we're not comparing.
We can
Daniel
all admit
Jones.
That Daniel Jones is not as he's not in the same stratosphere of quarterbacks as Jalen Hurts. Like we can all admit that. Nor is the New York Giants offensive line in the same stratosphere as the Eagles offensive line.
I understand.
There are structural differences.
But it was
in
yes
that
no
team.
Question. I'm not saying
I understand the point that you're making. Like, what has Jalen Hurts done to, you know, warrant the top 5 consideration? But what hasn't he done to
you? Don't you yourself don't sound convinced.
What did he do to Mike and East? All right, so Mike and East, he's basically saying Jalen Hurts is a quarterback that doesn't turn the ball over. He's doing everything he needs to do to get this team. He's winning games. He's been to the Super Bowl 2 times in the last 3 years. He's not doing anything wrong.
Exactly.
Essentially, to be like, he's not hurting the team.
So by definition, would you say he's a facilitator?
I mean, I think all quarterbacks need to be a facilitator.
All quarterbacks need to be a facilitator. Is he a facilitator? Is he going over and beyond like a Jaden Daniels, like a Lamar Jackson, or a Josh Allen, or a Mahomes?
I mean, I'm gonna say no, but it's like you don't need Jalen Hurts to do that. And you see that all those guys that you named, they're in Cancun right now.
But okay.
And Jalen's in the Super Bowl.
Why, you said he doesn't need to do that. Why? Because he has Saquon Barkley. So he, as a quarterback.
When you asked him to do that, he did it.
We're talking about this playoffs, Mike.
He just had 248 passing yards on 70.
Who was the MVP of that game that they just played? And if you, it wasn't Jalen Hurts.
I know
what
who
about
it was
the game before that. What about the game before
actually,
that?
Actually, I would
say the defense. What
about the game before that? I'm going to
say Yes. Who's the MVP of that game?
The defense.
When it was snowing and the ball slippery, you're just going to give it to your running back.
Okay, so we see the best player on the field for the Eagles, yes or no?
Who?
Saquon Barkley.
Personally, I feel like Jalen Carter was. But I mean,
offensively,
I'm not arguing that Saquon Barkley is not, or he hasn't been their best player.
Was he the best player? Was Saquon Barkley the best player on the Eagles offense for the entire 2024 regular season?
Yes, he's probably the offensive player of the
year. Okay, so then what are we talking about? All of the other quarterbacks who you just named, you cannot make the argument
for any of those other guys.
Do you think Saquon Barkley would be the offensive player of the year
if Kenny Pickett started the entire year?
Yeah.
You do?
Saquon Barkley? I think he would be the offensive player of the year regardless.
So you're saying you don't see there wouldn't be no drop off in the Eagles team if Kenny Pickett started?
There would be a drop off, but offensive player of the year is an individual award.
Right. I'm saying though, you think Saquon would still put up the numbers he put up?
The threat of Jalen Hurts.
I get what you're saying. I don't think he puts up the same numbers. See, no, but I still think he's the best player on offense regardless.
All I'm saying is Jalen Hurts has an impact. He has impact for sure. He has the aura.
I'm cutting you like. Mike.
Let me ask you this though. How impactful do you think it would be if the Eagles replaced Jalen Hurts with Josh Allen? How much of an impact do you think that would be for them?
Josh
Allen turns the ball over. And when it matters the most, Josh Allen doesn't show up.
Okay.
So that circles back to what Jalen was saying. Is he basing it off of his ability to not turn the ball over?
I'm basing it off of performance.
Because I feel like that's just a singular aspect of what makes a quarterback great. Sure, it's a blaring one, but in terms of how you've been explaining Jalen Hurts, it sounds like Jalen Hurts is a facilitator. And I'm not saying that doesn't make him a great quarterback. What I'm saying is, in terms of the other quarterbacks competing in the playoffs, he is not top five in that category.
I think the other quarterbacks in this playoffs, they have had, outside of the NFC Championship game, I think they had higher highs than Jalen Hurts. But their lows...
Why would you say outside the NFC playoffs?
The NFC Championship?
I mean, NFC Championship.
Because that was a great football game.
It was, but how was that taken away from what Jaden Daniels did? Sorry.
Performance-wise?
Yes. He played a great game.
You think he played a better game than Jalen?
Yes.
I disagree.
Saquon Barkley was the best offensive player on that field. Yes or no?
Right.
We watched the same game, right?
Yeah, he was. I'm talking about comparing the two.
Jaden Daniels went on... That was a crazy drive they had, right?
Yeah. It's not
down the field, control the time of possession in the third quarter for almost, 8 minutes? Almost 20 plays for a touchdown. That's Jaden Daniels.
Right.
They handed the ball off to Saquon Barkley, 2 plays and a touchdown.
It was one play.
One play.
Yeah, it was an 18-play drive.
Do y'all understand that, if the Eagles won the Super Bowl, there would be, 6 active quarterbacks with a Super Bowl appearance? And Jalen Hurts would be in that conversation with Mahomes, Flacco, Stafford, Rodgers. Do y'all understand that? Where that would put him?
He's a winner, for sure.
He's definitely a winner. He's a winner, for sure.
The objective?
The win.
Exactly.
I'm a Eagles fan. I'm with you. I'm saying my only thing I wanted to debate with you on was, out of the 5 quarterbacks you name, mm-hmm. I'm taking 4 of them. I'm not taking Matthew Stafford on the Eagles. I don't think that I wouldn't choose Matthew Stafford.
I feel like
over
Matthew
Hurts.
Stafford has the same amount of pull on offense that Jalen Hurts would have if you put him on the Eagles.
His lack of ability. I think Hurts is to Trent's point about Kenny Pickett. If Kenny Pickett was in, would Saquon Barkley be offensive player of the year? No, simply because Hurts has a threat in his mobility.
Exactly.
That at least creates some form of this offense can click because of that. With Matthew Stafford, you don't get that. It becomes a pocket passing offense, and Saquon Barkley and the team, it wouldn't mesh well.
Not even to limit it to playoff quarterbacks, but all the quarterbacks in general. You know, I'm pretty sure y'all would probably have Herbert at that 5 spot, or I don't know, maybe CJ or somebody. I don't know.
This is gonna be a live show.
Herbert's trash, but what Jalen Hurts does, it's not the prettiest thing in the world. He's not Lamar Jackson with the football in his hands, and he's not Patrick Mahomes, you know, throwing the ball.
So then what are
Can I finish?
Right, go ahead, you're right.
Is he as good as a passer as Lamar Jackson?
Okay, I want him to finish his
point. Hold on. But what Jalen Hurts does, he just executes the offense. The point of a quarterback is to be indulged in the offense, know it front and back. And I think Jalen Hurts does that. He's one of the best at it in the association.
Como se dice, a facilitator.
Yes, he's a facilitator. But to answer your point, no, Lamar Jackson's a really good passer, actually. He's one of the best pure passers in the game.
This is what I'm saying. I think for Jalen Hurts, obviously the leadership, You talked about that, his ability to not turn the ball over, really be overall what you want for a quarterback decision. Make
right.
Make mostly smart decisions. I'm not going to say he does it all the time, but make mostly smart decisions. But I'm saying that you can get that from guys like Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen too. It's just a little bit different when you're actually required to be the sole guy on offense. Well, the sole guy is a little disingenuous, but you're the main focal point of the offense. And I can't say that that's Jalen Hurts at this point in his career.
And that's why I'm saying that the aspect of turning over the ball is only like a singular thing to consider and not just the entire objective. Because he doesn't turn over the ball, that he is a top five quarterback.
And it's not even just turnovers.
He doesn't have to be the guy.
When the turnovers are your fault and it's blatant, like that's a red flag. That's bad. And when it comes to Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, it's always their fault.
All right, well, I guess turnovers get coaches fired. On to our next topic.
All right, Jalen.
I had the Eagles winning it all. I think top to bottom, they are a great team. And you add the X factor of having Saquon out there. That's what they needed when they lost, was it two seasons ago, to the Chiefs in the same position they're in now.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the Eagles. Give me 27-24.
That's crazy.
Saquon's birthday is on the Super Bowl, too.
Yeah, it is.
I feel like we should let EJ go last, you know.
But both of the biased people go last.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going to actually go with the Chiefs for this one. Three-peat on the line. I feel like Mahomes is notorious for playing his best football around this time of the year, and it's for something much bigger, something that hasn't been done in NFL history. We all know he didn't get a chance to be Brady. He missed out on that chance, but this is something that he can do that Brady never did, and it puts him further into the GOAT conversation. You're going to get a motivated squad all around. Motivated coaches, motivated defense, motivated Travis Kelce, motivated Patrick Mahomes. The whole team is going to be completely motivated, because for the Eagles, this is about getting a Super Bowl trophy. For the Chiefs, this is about making history that nobody can ever touch. I think it's more than a trophy for us. It's more than a trophy. Trust me.
There's storylines in this, too.
I don't mean to downplay it and say that it's just a trophy for them, but it's just a little bit different for the Chiefs. It's an added motivation for them.
It's definitely there. The three-peat would be nice for them, but unfortunately, the Philadelphia Eagles are coming for revenge. I said it was crazy earlier.
Yeah, I was going to say, explain that.
You said 27-24. Literally in my mind, I said, I'm going to go 27-24.
Okay, for sure. So that was
actually wild. I'm not going to change my prediction either. That was just crazy.
I thought you would say like that was a crazy score, but I was like, I mean, I feel like that's pretty tame.
No, it is. I think, you know, I don't think either team's going to hit 30.
My only fear is that, listen, I never want to go into a close game against number 15.
That's literally after I thought of 27-24, I was like, but a close game against the Chiefs, like, then you start putting it in the hands of the refs too. You start putting it in the hands of things that you can't control. And it's just things like that. And then you start making dumb decisions, like trying to sneak in on fourth down, and then, you know, they get the ball back. Like, I can just see it happening.
I can just smell a jet sweep with AJ Brown for some reason on like fourth and two.
But I think the fact is going to come down to the Eagles offense is going to at least get something. Yeah. Like, it's going to at least get something. It's going to come down to what the Eagles defense can do to the Chiefs.
But it's that you can't let Mahomes control the clock either, because
I know
that's the biggest thing.
That's like, the turnovers, the Eagles have made it through these playoffs because they cause turnovers.
Because they cause turnovers. They don't turn over the ball again.
Yep.
But then it's also because they can score so quick.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's going to be the game plan for them. They have to build some drives and chew as much clock, because you don't want the ball in the hands of 15.
It's not promised you're going to get those turnovers against the Chiefs. Like, it's just not the same. I think the Chiefs are a more disciplined team, even though they had a couple fumbles against the Bills. Those were kind of fluky. I think you can't rely on your defense getting you those turnovers you had against the Commanders and the Rams and the Packers.
Man, you know,
Mike over here sitting like Thanos, like he's a spokesperson for Mahomes or something.
It's like I can't even fix my mouth to say the Philadelphia Eagles could win this game. They could, though. I'm not gonna be like completely biased, but when Jordan and the Bulls, when they were playing and they started winning, nobody else was winning. And like, if you see number 15 on the other side, which Josh Allen has done, Joe Burrow has done, Lamar Jackson, Jalen Hurts seen him in the Super Bowl, he probably still has nightmares.
Mm-hmm. y'all laughing. It's a different level of fear. It's a different level of fear.
This
is worse than what Steph Curry did to James Harden when the Warriors were winning.
But you know, I'm thinking about that one interview that he had with, who was it, Jamar Chase? Where he was like, I'm not going to say his name.
Yeah.
Like, they treat this man like the boogeyman.
He's not wrong. It's just so wild to ask someone their score prediction on the Chiefs and Eagles game, and they start with, you know,
Jordan and the Bulls. The craziest thing, you said the boogeyman. I remember, I believe it was against the Jacksonville Jaguars the first year they won they started the three-peat. Pat Mahomes was hurt, and he came in the game, or he talked to Andy Reid, and Andy Reid said, when it's a Grim, go be the Grim Reaper. Like, he's really like...
Bro, the end all when you done,
he's
dog.
The, he's the end-all, be-all.
Please clean up when you done.
Like...
No, I don't think we can leave that part in, but
like,
I get it.
We have to, like, I don't think you do.
It's just the way you put it.
Did you think, bro, the Bills had a chance to win that game?
Did you hear anything I said about do not give 15 the ball? Like, give him time with the ball.
Correct.
Oh, my gosh.
But you didn't even hit, 15 didn't even have the ball. Josh Allen had the ball with 3 minutes and 30 seconds with three timeouts. If somebody would have told you that before the game, you would have said, oh, yeah, the Bills have a legit shot to win the game. But he looked across. He seen 15. He had 4 opportunities to move the ball and get a first down. He couldn't do it.
Because he looked at number 15 across the field. Yeah. Give me your score prediction.
I know for a fact y'all see the shots of Josh Allen every time he loses to Mahomes in the playoffs. Like, he looks like he saw a ghost, bro. I can't make this up.
Please score prediction.
I think this is gonna be a really good football game. Probably one of the best we've seen in a long time. It's probably gonna be reminiscent of when the Chiefs and the Rams played in 2018, Mahomes' first year starting. It was a big shootout. It was like 53, something like that.
That's a good game.
I don't think it'll be like 50. But I think it'll be like, my prediction is 31-30. I think it'll be
30. That would be the most Mahomes way to win.
And I think I can see it now. Mahomes is down, however much that would be, 25-30. Drive down the field.
See, y'all going for two and not making it?
Oh, I'm sorry. 24-36. Get the one kick. Yeah.
One can almost say that you can taste it, actually.
I can smell the air in the air.
I didn't give a score prediction yet, so I'm going to do it
please,
now.
Yes, please, Justin.
I think this is going to be a close game, so don't be thrown off by my score. I'm going to pick the Chiefs 24-13, but I think it's going to be a close game through and through, and that the fourth quarter is really wasn't going to decide this. So
I could easily see that, too.
I can't. 13 points in the Super Bowl.
He's genuinely...
We legitimately watched a game in which the Eagles, if I'm not... It was the
Patriots and Rams.
Rams and Patriots.
That was the most disgusting
Rams.
Super Bowl.
That was the
worst
Super Bowl I've ever seen in my life.
The Eagles offense has an MVP candidate and an offensive player of the year candidate on their team. Ending up with 13 points in the Super Bowl would be the hugest disappointment of any team.
Are they not going up against the
Jazz in 97-98 thought they could win.
The coordinator's nice.
I mean, are you still bringing up like the 97 Jazz?
97-98 Jazz thought they
could
win.
Are we not talking about the Super Bowl? Are we not talking about football?
He's still trying to compare Mahomes to MJ.
Like, Mahomes, he wins this, he's in the greatest athlete of all time conversation.
Understand, like, the way you're talking about this game is it's kind of reminiscent of last year as far as the San Francisco 49ers. Mm-hmm. Everybody thought that was going to be a high scoring game because of the offensive talent that they had. I kind of viewed it the same way, and it went into overtime. And
I forget what the score of that game was, but
it went into overtime, and then the 49ers got a field goal first, and then the Chiefs won it on a touchdown.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, through and through, that game was not very high scoring all the way out. So I could see this game being the same way, kind of being like a 13-17 sort of deal, and maybe the Chiefs pull out.
I'll give you this. It's possible. I'm just saying it would be a huge disappointment to have that type of offensive caliber that you've had. I mean, you just put up 55 points the last game.
I just got chills just...
Next topic.
Please go to the next topic.
But we had a lot of head coaching moves to start the playoffs, and a lot of it is starting to take form. There's only one head coaching vacancy left, the New Orleans Saints. So let's talk about the head coaching hires, and name which one was your favorite and which team are you most optimistic about following their coaching.
I don't have a favorite. I have a beef that I need to call out right now.
Talk to me.
Liam Cohen. Liam Cohen. What's up, fam? Like, I don't know if you ever tuned in to the podcast. How you doing? My name is Jay Scott. Quick question. What's the beef? We printed a contract for you. One of the youngest, greatest minds in college football right now as an offensive coordinator. You have the possibility to go to the NFC Championship or farther next year. All we need is to sign a few more pieces here and there, which we can easily do through the draft. You had a verbal agreement to return next season. You hopped on I-4 to 75 to Duval County, and you let the purgatory of NFL careers convince you that the head coaching position for the Jacksonville Jaguars was going to be the next greatest career move. For what? For
For what? Explain it to me, please. What do they have that we don't? Trevor Lawrence?
Opportunity.
The Prince.
I mean, opportunity. Hey, coach.
If you're telling me I get to coach Trevor Lawrence or Baker.
Listen, you're in your first year with the Bucks, and you have Baker Mayfield. You have all these different pieces going around. We are two plays away from going to the NFC Championship, possibly, right?
A couple plays, but...
Two plays. I'll still give you two plays. Your time is coming.
Yeah.
Your time is coming. But I'm not even necessarily mad that he left. In the way that he did it, you had a verbal agreement with somebody. They're printing out the contract as you're talking. You're not returning no phone calls, no emails. You miss a team meeting. The next thing you know, our GM is finding out you're in Jacksonville, of all places.
Y'all play each other? That'd be a good game.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm marking that on the calendar.
Y'all play each other?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's amazing. Can't wait to see that.
We should go.
I'm going to throw a...
On that real quick, I think it's unfair for you to judge a man for taking a head coaching job. If it's a move for your career, you're making more money.
He got more money.
And also, if you look at it,
they're
it's like,
to
okay,
match his contract.
I just took, I don't know.
They were making him to be one of the highest paid, no, sorry, not one of the highest offensive paid offensive coordinator in the NFL.
Yeah, but would you rather be a coordinator or a coach?
Your time is coming. You make more money with less responsibility. And in 2 years, another better job than Jacksonville of all places opens up.
But honestly, after asking that question, I would think I would rather be a coordinator. Because like looking at the Chiefs, like Spags has a great job. He just gets the call plays on defense.
Head coaching comes with a lot. It always comes with a lot, man.
But if you're ready to take that jump for your career, then you know that. And for him,
but in one
I
year,
think
though,
he looked
I think
at a situation where he's like, okay, I just took Baker Mayfield and I completely transformed his career around. I see a guy, Trevor Lawrence, who is dealing with some issues right now. He's struggling. I see the talent there. I can turn that around too. Does he have offensive weapons around him? Heck yeah. I can turn that around too. I can work with this. So
But head coaching starts to become more.
Top five pick in the draft this year. Like
head coaching starts to become more than just what the offense.
Because then you got
to
deal with the GM, and the Jags have a notoriously bad GM.
Yeah, hard to argue with that.
it doesn't make sense because if you're talking about, I get the career elevation. You're still a young coach. You're not even 40 yet. That time is coming. They're making you the highest paid offensive coordinator, and you walk out on a verbal agreement the same day?
Yeah, I would have stayed a couple more years. I would have stayed a couple more years. Like, your first year, one and done? I don't know.
That sounds personal.
But, who you had, though?
I'm most moved by Mike Vrabel. Him and bringing back Josh McDaniels for the Patriots. I think it's a good fit. Patriots culture. You get your old offensive coordinator back as well to pair with your franchise quarterback. You have a chance right now to really get a playmaker in the NFL draft this year. No pun intended. That's a good spot for him to be in. It's a good spot for the Patriots organization, and seems like they're on the road to turning it around. So I'm most moved by that.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Vrabel's nice. I'm a fan of bringing back old faces to familiar roles. And it's not a head coaching position, but Robert Saleh, I think I said that right. But him going back to the defensive coordinator with the 49ers, I think the 49ers desperately need some type of change to get back right. And I think that was a good move. But head coaching wise, it's tough because of that division, but I actually like Pete Carroll in Oakland. I actually just really like the fit. I think that the Raiders desperately needed it with Jim Harbaugh and Sean Payton. All going there. Like those are some elite coaches. I think the Raiders were in desperate need of an elite coach coming by. So Pete Carroll going there, I think he could turn it around and they'll start contending for at least that third spot with the Broncos or Chargers.
Now, you know, that's one thing I thought about when Vegas fired their head coach after the season. I was like, you know, you start to think about going into a division next year with all these elite head coaches. Yeah. Is this the guy that you're putting your hat on? Like, is this the guy that you're putting your future and the chips in his hand? I don't know if they saw that, so I think it was a good decision for them to go ahead and go get Pete Carroll, too.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll's old now. That's my concern.
He is, but so are all these. Like, The division's a bunch of experienced head coaches. Like, it's just going to be tough for them to compete with a young coach that's inexperienced. You have Sean Payton. Like, I just named them. Like, it's going to be tough to compete with all that. Andy Reid, Sean Payton, Jim Harbaugh. It's tough to compete with all that without an experienced head coach. So I think Pete Carroll can at least put that team in the right direction for now.
I think for me, it's
but
more...
The age is concerning.
The age is concerning because you stepped away from football.
Yeah.
So I know that your heart never really goes away from it, but it may be a bit of an adjustment for him to get back into it for at least the first year. So
we'll see. I'm excited to see how that matches up in the AFC West. Those four coaches in the AFC West, that's going to be entertaining.
I don't see nothing different happening in the AFC West.
Well, you're a Chiefs fan.
No, man. No, I'm like legit though. Like the Raiders.
You think they're still finishing bottom?
Yes. When it comes to, hey, maybe the Broncos, because I'm not even the biggest Bo Nix believer, but that's another question for another day. When it comes to head coaching, you got to think about the situation that you're walking into. And Justin hit it right on the nail, or hit the nail right on the head. It's the Patriots hiring Mike Vrabel. Not only did they hire Mike Vrabel, but they brought back Josh McDaniels, who is an exceptional offensive coordinator. But not only did they do that, they have like $100 million in cap space. They have 9 draft picks in this upcoming draft. Depending on what, and I'm rooting for him, you know, he's a black head coach. Depending on what Aaron Glenn does with the Jets, I think the Patriots could possibly finish second in that division, like as a floor.
As a floor.
As a floor.
That's ceiling, buddy. I ain't gonna lie to you. That's ceiling.
Because there will be changes in Buffalo. I think they will make some changes. I don't know what, but they will make some changes, whether it's retaining Joe Brady or, you know, hiring somebody else. But I think they probably would already let him go by now. But you have the assets. You have the draft capital. You have a starting quarterback. Not too many head coaches on this list are walking into a situation with a starting quarterback.
And a good one.
Exactly. And one that's young.
So, he's nice, but floor being the second, that means their ceiling is the first.
No. Do you not understand that Mike Vrabel took Ryan Tannehill, one, he revived his career, and two, he took him to an AFC championship.
That's nice and all, but the teams in that division still remain the same.
Outside of the Buffalo Bills, I'm looking around today, and I'm looking around like, yeah, we're the second best team in this conference. In this division.
I mean, feel like that's debatable. I do feel like that's
today?
Debatable.
Today, yeah. No. I think after the offseason, that could be a conversation.
The offseason has to happen.
I'm sorry. I worded that wrong. We could be the second best.
Yeah.
I worded it wrong.
And that's all I was waiting for. Offseason has to happen. Right, I'm sure. You know, things are going to shape up the way they are, but right now, they're
four. No, it's still four right now. If you're just looking at rosters, like Miami still has Tyreek Hill, but with that situation, Tyreek Hill might not be in Miami.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of mites. And who?
And I don't want to. And if I'm the Patriots and I'm playing the Miami Dolphins and I don't see Tyreek Hill, I'm grinning in ear to ear. Like, I'm excited. And then the Jets, if they bring in a new quarterback or if they keep Rodgers, I mean, I don't know. But I'm excited about the Patriots.
Honest.
I don't know if you know if we're going to have time. We might need to go to the NBA. Because how much time are we looking at right now?
54.
We cut off about 2 minutes of you messing up. We want to keep it to like an hour. So I think we might just need to end it at NBA.
You want to go talk about NBA?
I'll give it to Ro. Okay. Honor space.
All right. Now on to some NBA news. You know, the trade deadline is approaching. Which NBA team do you guys think needs to make a move the most and why?
I'm picking my team, simply the Heat, simply because I think they're dancing around that 6-7 seed. I think they have that shows that they have a legitimate shot at playing in at least the play-in. I think the team that they have now, especially with everything going on with Jimmy Butler, it's time to make a move. Get him going. He don't want
to
be here.
Even beyond that, it's just time to move on.
Yeah.
It's just time to just focus on basketball. There's too much bad press going around right now.
But what really, why I had to go with them most of all is the way Khalil Ware has been looking. Mm-hmm. It has given me hope that we could do something in the playoffs. Like, before it was like, it might be a while. Like, we won't contend, but Khalil Ware, like, the team has actually been hooping. We just had that big win against the Magic.
Yep.
Like, we wow. The thing is, we're actually winning, and we're dancing around that. The East is not as strong as the West, so we're dancing around that area where we can actually, you know, put up a fight. So I think making a move is the best case scenario for the Heat to bring in a guy like, I don't know, De'Aaron Fox or somebody.
For me, I'm gonna have to go with the Milwaukee Bucks. I think you have to make a move if you're them, because right now you're pretty comfortably below the Cavaliers, the Celtics, the Knicks. You're comfortably below them. I think depth is an issue for them. I think that Chris Middleton not being the player that he was 2-3 years ago is going to be a huge issue for them, especially when it comes to the playoffs. They have to be able to kind of move off of him and get complementary pieces to add to their starting lineup and to their bench as well. If Dame and Giannis end up getting injured, there's no telling how far they could drop down in these standings. So for them, they have to strike now while the iron is hot. Dame's getting older. You want to keep Giannis around. You have to put a good roster around them. You can't just rely on those two to get you over the hump, because the Celtics are a good team. The Cavaliers are a good team. The Knicks are a deep team. You know, a lot of times when I watch the Bucks play, even though they won the in-season tournament, that's great, I've never really felt like they're a great cohesive team. But mostly they're just kind of being elevated by the star power that is Giannis Antetokounmpo and Damian Lillard. So for them, making a move to get complementary pieces, maybe moving off guys like Portis and Middleton, I would highly recommend. And it's crucial that they do that in order to compete.
I agree with EJ. I think the most pressing team is my team. Again, just moving on from the bad press, just going to play basketball and seeing what we can do to build off the future. Because, I mean, the future is bright. We have a lot of young talent. And it's just a matter of putting the right piece there to hold it together or just figuring out what to do to make us win now. But I want to, you know, go out to the West real fast. I think another team to look at would be the Warriors. Mm. Warriors need to make a few minor adjustments and they're right back in the play-in contention. Right now, they're sitting at the 10th seed, but you're looking at teams like Dallas and Sacramento whose futures are a little uncertain right now. Now is the time to get you a star player or at least a good role player to put around Steph and make a push for the play-in because that's a dangerous team to see in the playoffs.
I got a question before I get into my two teams that I have. Now that De'Aaron Fox is available, and I know him and Curry have a relationship, No.
I think he has a close relationship with Bam Adebayo.
Bam's making the call. Curry. Bam is making the call.
That's not bias either.
Didn't they play Kentucky?
Yeah,
there, right.
Yeah. Like,
okay, yeah.
You know,
it was just a thought, though.
Yeah, they're going to need to get a third team involved, which is always a pain in the neck, but...
It is what it is. Just make the call. Make it happen. You need it.
I don't want to disappoint, you know, but it seems like Miami Heat fans, y'all do this to yourselves.
Every year, at least once a year.
Every year.
Yeah, but does it not make the most sense now? Of all times it's ever happened, does it not make the most sense now with your star player?
It made a lot of sense when it was Kyrie Irving, too. Because before, Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving, Team USA, hey, let's put them together. So it made a lot of sense there, too. So let's not act like it was...
I get what you're saying, yes, but I'm saying it makes the most sense now because your star player is walking out of team shoot-arounds. Like, I'm saying it's time to make a move.
It's too much going on.
Like, yeah. Well, of course. I mean, he had a reason. I'm just saying with all this going on, this is like actually like, I know we do this all the time, but this is actually the time to make a move.
Serious, guys.
Like, I'm serious. Like, why stick with all this that's going on? Keep this guy around. He's posting that he's jobless on his Instagram page. Like, all this that's going on, all this drama, it's just hurting the team. Like, make the move, start over, make a push.
Here's the thing, though, and I'm not sure if our listeners may not know, but De'Aaron Fox and the Spurs, there's some chatter there. If I'm the Sacramento Kings, why am I hopping on the Miami Heat's phone before I hop on the Spurs phone? As I told y'all this before, the Spurs currently have their own picks. They have the Atlanta Hawks picks too.
I'm not a fan of trading in conference though.
That's what I was saying. Why would I want to?
I'm never a fan of trading in conference,
and I still have to play them at least three more times during the season.
Why are we talking about De'Aaron Fox like LeBron or something? Yeah. De'Aaron Fox isn't gonna change. First of all, if you're trading him in conference, you're trying to rebuild. And if he's getting traded to a team that's trying to win now,
it's who he's pairing up with. That's all I'm saying.
I personally don't want to see Fox in this situation.
I understand it because Wimby's 21.
I definitely don't want to see Fox.
Just that duo alone. I'm not trading in conference because of that. Like that.
I understand.
Of all teams, no, not the Spurs.
But then again, we've seen the Kings take 15 years to rebuild their franchise. So it's like
they're not scared of a rebuild. I can guarantee you they're not scared of a rebuild.
The Kings?
No, I don't think they're scared of a rebuild. They've moved on from their coach. I mean, this is about as good as the time as any to just go ahead and start
over. Now I'm
curious.
So when you say, like, why would they pick up the Heat over the Spurs? Why would they pick up the Spurs? Like, who is it that the Spurs have that they're going to listen to?
Just say draft capital.
They have draft capital along with players, younger players with more potential. Well, not more potential. I'm not going to say more potential. But they have a plethora of young players. They have Stephon Castle. Devin Vassell is a good player. They could get Keldon Johnson to Dale as well. They have good pieces, too.
There's pieces, but...
Steph Castle and Wimby, they're untouchable.
Steph is untouchable for Fox.
I think Castle.
No, I don't think Steph is untouchable for Fox. I don't think he is.
That's interesting.
If you're trying to capitalize off the Wimby era now, cool, and mind you, hold on, I want to be accurate about this, but the Spurs are not very far off the play, and it could make a playoff push now. And then De'Aaron Fox is young; he's still in his 20s, and you're pairing basically a top five guard in the NBA, arguably right now, with a guy who could potentially be the best player in the NBA. Wimby's maybe like 2 or 3 years off.
It's like
from being in the conversation of the best player in the NBA, and you're getting him as point guard for the lifetime. Like,
it sounds good, but for the Spurs situation, don't you feel like you're giving away like stuff you might need, like for a team that's kind of building up? I think that draft capital is things that are really valuable to them going forward.
And I don't think the Spurs are in a rush because if they were, they got a younger guard in the offseason instead of getting an aging Chris Paul.
That's true too, but the Spurs right now, I think with The Atlanta Hawks pick, they would be at 10th. With their own pick, they'd be at 11th. They're not really in a position to where they could go get an elite guard in this specific draft right now.
True.
You never know how these players are going to pan out. So I think if you do have a chance to maybe move some of those pieces to go get a Fox right now for the long term, it could be a move that they're willing to do, especially because Fox, like I said, Fox is still a player who's just reaching his prime right now. You're pairing him up with a guy who is ascending towards his prime and is already arguably top 10. You don't know what Wemby's ceiling is yet. No one knows. He could be the best player in the history of this freaking league, and you're going to pair him up with a top five guy right now in his prime in a conference where you're not far off from like being in the conversation of the playoffs. It would be second year. Like,
I think his ceiling is second best player, the guy named LeBron. I don't think anybody's ever touching him.
To be determined.
The way I talk about Pat, oh my gosh.
I think
Trent, what's your two teams?
Oh yeah. I think when I'm thinking about what team needs to make a move the most, I'm thinking how will the move, like, what move can they make that will make them, you know, a contender? And I don't think the teams that y'all named would make y'all a contender, because I don't see y'all being better than Boston or Cleveland. And then you named the Warriors. I don't see the Warriors touching Houston or OKC. And that's where I'm turning my head to, is the top of the Western Conference. I think now is a win-now opportunity for OKC. You're by far the best team in the conference. I think if you go get a Cam Johnson, which is the move I'm looking at, or Lauri Markkanen. Actually, no, Lauri just got a new deal. You can't afford Lauri. You can, but yeah, if you go get a Cam Johnson from the Brooklyn Nets, who are about to have a fire sale, I think that would undoubtedly make you the favorite. Not, you're already the favorite, but there's no questions that you wouldn't come out. And then Houston, you see somebody like Amen Thompson, who is ascending right before our eyes, and you have guys like Cam Whitmore, Jalen Green, Fred VanVleet. Go get Jimmy Butler. Go get Kevin Durant. Go get Devin Booker if you can. It's like you have the defensive infrastructure to have that go-to guy and compete with the Oklahoma City Thunder if they decide to sit on their hands and not go get Cam Johnson. And you have Kevin Durant on your roster with a roster like this. I think those two teams would be my pick for who needs to make a move the most.
I partially agree with you. The only reason I say partially is because the way I interpret this question is
like a struggling team.
Not necessarily struggling, but teams that are on the verge and almost desperate to get in that conversation of real contenders. And I think for the Thunder, the reason why they may hesitate on making a move right now is because they're comfortably at the top of the West, and they can win a championship with this roster right now. There's not really this immense pressure for them to go make a move that puts them over the top, that really like makes them almost nearly unbeatable across the NBA. They've beaten the Celtics. They've destroyed the Cavaliers. They've dominated their conference. I think I look at that team, they're in a good position. A move isn't necessarily a necessity.
But we've seen with the Boston Celtics, they were good enough to get there, but they didn't win until they made those moves. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's how I was looking at it. But
I think for the Thunder, you're getting Chet back at some point. Like, you're getting Chet back at some point for them. So for them to make a move right now, still to me, isn't a necessity, because Chet could be the piece that puts them over the hump.
100%. But that's all, fellas. Now on to, you know, our favorite part of the show, shout outs. I'm glad to be back in the studio, man. Like, I was excited.
You last episode.
You said what?
So we missed you last episode.
Yeah, I had the flu last episode. Then last week it snowed in Florida, which was crazy.
Wild.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited for this semester. You know, no Jeff, no G. Last semester for Justin, EJ, shoot, even T3. He don't even be here no more. But yeah, I gotta thank my Lord and Savior. Without him, you know, we wouldn't be where we are today. You know, still looking for that summer internship though.
And it's gonna come.
Yeah, it's gonna come. Gotta shout out my guys, P5. Welcome back. We missed you. And lastly, last but certainly not least, gotta shout out my homie.
I knew he was gonna do it.
Go get the 3-peat, man. Go get it, man. This your league, my guy.
Anyways, you know, shout out to my Lord and Savior. Shout out to the guys in the studio. Shout out to this semester, because we're going to make it a good one. We're going to do everything we can, everything we know we can do. And then I'm going to graduate. I'm going to be at the gym. It's going to be, you know, just overall great experience for me this semester. But lastly, shout out Saquon Barkley. That man makes me happy. And I'm only saying that because of you, Trim.
Shout out to my Lord and Savior. Shout out to everybody who's in this room right now. I pray that this is a semester that's full of everything y'all want. I know that there's just big opportunities coming y'all way, and I'm looking forward to seeing just all y'all blossom in that. I got to give a shout out to my man Ryan Day. You know, they was calling for your head after that Michigan game, and they was calling for your head after that Oregon game. But I held it down for you, big bro. So shout out to you for getting that ring. Great coach, and I'm finally glad that he got the hardware to show it off.
Man, y'all are over here, you know, thanking, shouting out people. Don't know. None of y'all are. No, I'm playing.
We have a Saquon Barkley, as Brian would say.
Anyways, I just want to say, you know, thank God, man. Thank my parents. Thank you, fam. You. Shout out to men's and women's basketball team. Y'all doing y'all thing, man. We're looking forward to covering a few more of the games coming up here soon. Hope we get you guys on the podcast and live show as well. Yeah.
That was a very mature response, didn't it?
Brianna.
Stop. Close the episode.
Like, he's averaging like 25 a game.
Actually, since we're on the topic, please, Jalen Hurts. Please, Saquon Barkley.
Halftime with the Playmakers is produced in the studios of WNNM FM 90.5 in the School of Journalism and Graphic Communication at Florida A&M University.